Here's the deal. Callers here, like all our guests on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll get to football segment number two. Let's get to the biggest game in town this weekend. No, not the Purple and the Lions. That will draw more interest, obviously. And I'm very intrigued about the game. But game four tonight, WNBA Finals, Liberty leading 2-1 over the Lynx. Matthew follows this team closely. He writes about it. Let's start with this stat. And I talked about this yesterday with Jim Pete. The Lynx in the lane in game three, obviously an extraordinarily close game. Inescu's shot was brilliant. Lynx jumped out to a big lead. It was the repeat from game one, except the teams were reversed. The Lynx, as you know, in the lane were 16 of 40. For a team in the finals, that's atrocious in the lane. The Liberty are the bigger and more physical team. Is the 16 for 40 to you, Matthew, aberration? It's going to happen? Or was this indicative of the Liberty's will and size having more of an effect as the series has moved along, acknowledging that all three games with 2 minutes to go were pick 'em and either team could have won?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think there were several times, probably more than several, where there's nobody around the Lynx player and they just missed it, which may have been them being nervous about those pterodactyl wings of Breanna Stewart. I think she has something like a 7'1" wingspan, and it looks that way. And she's not even the tallest player on their team. That would be Jonquel Jones. And I think that those two have sort of struck some terror into the Lynx. And look, I don't subscribe to blaming the refs for things, okay? But when you look at the fouls, and I ran through this in an article that I did, when you look at the fouls called, there's just no way in a prison rules type of series that this has been that the Lynx only got fouled, I think, 12 times or 12 free throws in that game. There's just no way. I mean, I think that the referees have really, really let them play, probably on both sides, but it stands out a lot more when you have the bigger team guarding the smaller team and making it difficult. But, you know, that's part of the thing that you have to answer with the New York Liberty. And, you know, one of the ways that they've been so good at getting to the basket is by spreading the floor, getting Breanna Stewart and Jonquel away from the paint. But the problem was that when they lost Alanna Smith, who's been one of their most valuable players, I think, when she went out with an injury, foul trouble was part of it as well, they just didn't have the ability to spread the floor the same way, because Smith is a very serious three-point threat, but Myesha Hines-Allen really isn't. So I thought the Liberty did a good job of making that adjustment and really playing the paint more. And the status of Smith for this game and how healthy she is going to be a big factor. But, I mean, I think overall, probably when they look back at that tape, it's just pure regret. I mean, there were so many transition buckets. The stat that blew my mind was that they caused like 16 turnovers by the Liberty and scored 8 total points off turnovers.
That's horrible. That's
just not going to work, right?
That's
so
horrible.
Many chances.
Yeah,
and they let that one get away, man.
Okay, so let me push back a little on officiating in this way. I watch a decent amount. You watch more the WNBA than I, but I'll say this. If you're the physical team and you're consistently the physical team in this sport compared to the Lynx, who are more of a ball movement, space and pace team, if you're more physical and you have more size and you play that way all year, I think it's just natural that you're going to get more of the benefit of the doubt than the other team. Is that a fair counterpoint?
No, it is. And when you look at the numbers, the Liberty have been exceptional at not fouling this year. And
which is a great skill, right? I mean, that's a huge emphasis.
It is. And the Lynx actually draw the second fewest fouls per game in the entire WNBA. So this is not a team that attacks the rim and gets to the foul line that often. Even Nafisa Collier only gets about 4 to 5 free throws per game. Normally, she does a lot of her work with those little fadeaways and things like that. At the same time, having been there and in the stands and watched it play out, I thought, how in the world did Breanna Stewart get two fouls in the first quarter and never commit another infraction for the entirety of that game? But what I'll say is that both teams' normal fouls per game are down. So I think that it's just entirely the league saying and the ref saying, we are going to let them play. We want the best product of back and forth basketball. We are not going to spend all night at the foul line. And if that's how they're going to play, then you have to adjust. I don't think it's an excuse, but it was a factor. I would put it that way.
For me, I've actually loved how the officials have stayed out of the way. You know, there were some borderline calls. In fact, there were just some wrong calls in game one, but I love letting them go. So let's talk Stewart a little bit. We know Stewart is one of the three or four best players in the game and has been at pretty much any level she's been at. In fact, most levels, she's just the clear-cut number one. She goes for 13 straight at one point, game three. She gets 22 of 30. Was it just Stewart being Stewart, or did the Liberty do anything different to create a little bit more space for her?
I don't think that they did. I think that what happened there was, you know, Breanna Stewart, she does have a championship ring in her past, but she was also kind of part of a little bit of a leadership duo with Sue Bird in Seattle. It was kind of always Sue Bird's team, and Breanna was like the younger player who was coming up. But last year was so embarrassing for the New York Liberty to lose the way that they did to the Aces. They didn't really even put up that much of a fight. The Aces had a couple of injuries they didn't take advantage of. And so we've spent about 360 days talking about, hey, you know, did the Liberty really have that player who's willing to take the bull by the horns, take the reins, be that person? Or is it a little bit of, oh, you do it kind of thing, which is what happened to them last year. And I think what Breanna Stewart said, and she was shown on the sideline saying, we're not bleeping losing this game. And I think that she just decided, if I don't do this right now, then it's not going to happen, and we're going to lose this series and fall behind and have to play again in Minnesota, and that's not going to be too easy. So I felt that it was really Breanna Stewart just raising the level of her play. I don't think in the playoffs she's been very good so far. Even though they got here, she was only still, even after a great game, she was only shooting 41% for the entire playoffs, and her shooting had been really off, I thought, for the entire postseason. But it seemed like there was a I will not be denied
yes.
type of attitude that she took. And that's just
with skill.
Players of all time do. Yep. And there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do when a player yep. like that gets hot and starts hitting shots. That said, I mean, the Lynx, that last minute of the third quarter, I mean, they were up with, I yes. think, a minute 20 left. They're up 9 points. You just can't let that happen. So,
Dave, I think what Matt Caller there said was Stewart should be cut by the Liberty before the game. Is that
yes,
what you?
That's exactly
about what
I heard.
Let's send mm-hmm. that over to Liberty headquarters. All right, this game will be a must-watch tonight. Game four from a sold-out Target Center. About a mile down the road on Sunday will be a sold-out U.S. Bank Stadium. The undefeated Vikings against the team which still might be the favorite to win the NFC, the Lions. Let's talk Lions and Purple with Mr. Purple Insider himself, Matthew Caller, when we return on WCCO.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
A fixture of Fridays when you subscribe to purpleinsider.football is the mailbag. I thought a number of very good questions today. And one of your responses surprised me a little bit just by how high the percentage was. Someone said, okay, with the Lions and Vikings playing Sunday here in the Twin Cities, give us the percentage that we might be staring at the NFC championship game, you know, months ahead down the road. You went 25%. I mean, that's a 1 in 4 chance. And I get it. The Vikings are undefeated. The Lions' only loss was a surprise to the Buccaneers. But 25% is awfully high when we're talking middle October. Why go that high of a number and believe in these two teams in late January, either in Detroit or Minneapolis, are going to meet to see who goes to the Super Bowl?
Well, certainly in a few weeks, if they melt down over like they did in 2016, then that percentage will drop significantly. But as of right now, I mean, I don't think you can look at two teams with better resumes than this for sustainability. I mean, the Vikings have beat the toughest teams on their schedule already, including at Green Bay, which I thought was an incredibly impressive victory. And Detroit has the best offense in terms of points per game in the entire NFL. Also, I was looking this up the other day. Maybe we'll circle back to this depending on the result, but teams that get to 7-0 have basically a coin flip chance to go to the Super Bowl historically.
That was a great stat.
Yeah, that's there's a little pressure on the Vikings to get there over these next 5-6 days when they play two quick games. But you know, I think when you look at the Vikings point differential, what they've done on defense, the players that they have, and the player that they're getting back in T.J. Hockenson on offense, I fully understand, and I think it's completely fair for people to wonder, can Sam Darnold really keep doing this? But go through the rest of the roster, go through the coaching staff, go through the atmosphere that they have in their home building, and I don't know, what am I supposed to look around the NFC and say that San Francisco, it's 3-3, is better than this team, or Philadelphia, Washington with a rookie quarterback? Who's supposed to be better? Green Bay? They were up by how many points against Green Bay down there in Lambeau?
Right.
So I just can't find any evidence right now until they show it to me that these two aren't the best teams in the conference.
A reminder on Matt's stat here, because I don't want that to be lost in this conversation. Teams in the Super Bowl era start 10-0, okay? 42 teams. 10 of them.
7-0.
What's that?
7-0. You said 10.
7-0. My bad. 7-0. 10 of them. Because I was thinking about the 10 number. 10 of them won the Super Bowl. 10 of them lost the Super Bowl. That's, as he said, that's basically half made it to the bowl. Let's stay with the Lions, at least one more question. The horrifying injury that hopefully you didn't see, but the impact on Aiden Hutchinson, who at the time most likely was the best defensive player in the game. Playing the game right, where he's ferocious with the pass rush, but he wasn't getting crushed against the run, I don't believe either, at least from stats I saw earlier. Maybe it changed. And he breaks a leg. It just was awful to watch. So it's not a one-man team. It's the team sport. We're going to hear all that. But reacting and trying to recover from that presence, how different is the Lions' defense without that monster? And how do the Vikings attack the Lions differently without Hutchinson as the opponent?
It is so wildly different with him and without him. I mean, with him, you have meetings about one guy. I mean, you have coaches sitting in rooms for hours going, how can we design every play with blocking him in mind? That's how good he is. I mean, it's very similar to Nick Bosa. It's very similar to Brian Burns, but I think he was playing even better than either one of those two guys. You can't just say, okay, Brian O'Neill, just go block him. I mean, as great as O'Neill is, that is an entire plan in itself to shift protection in that direction, to get running backs, to get tight ends, and now it's gone. And there's no player on this roster that is going to come anywhere close to that. That doesn't mean the Vikings are out of the woods, though, because they also have two great interior players. And I think we know that always and forever,
yes,
you and I, we better talk
Ed,
about the other team's defensive tackle.
Yes. Ed Ingram is coming up, either directly or indirectly.
Maybe, because I am curious. Kevin O'Connell mentioned potentially bringing Dalton Risner onto 53, and I think that the patience for the right guard has started to run out for Kevin O'Connell with the number of times that plays have just been blown up. And I probably mentioned this stat to you, but Ingram has a worse pass blocking efficiency rating than Dakota Dozier and Tom Compton. And those are the two guys that drove us just as crazy. So I would not be terribly shocked at some point if we see Dalton Risner, but that's where the mismatch is if Ingram is playing, which is Alain McNeil, DJ Reader, two massive dudes. They could get after the passer, and I think that it's still a problem. Plus, Aaron Glenn has blitzed a lot. He is one of the highest blitz rates, especially on third down, so they have to be ready for that. But it's a very different defense without Aiden Hutchinson. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, Cashman is out. Jones, Risner, Hockenson, Phillips, Jones, all questionable. Let's get to Hockenson here because he's hurt against his former team on a play, and I know we're making it harder and harder for defensive players to tackle big athletic players, but man, when one of their legs is planted and the guy goes low, that's how players suffer the injury Hockenson did. I just felt like from the verbiage and the timing that this was a week where Hockenson waits one more week. I mean, and then I heard Hockenson yesterday say, I'm better at everything now. You know, I'm faster, I'm stronger on all the metrics. So what is your sense about Hockenson playing and how important is it for Hockenson to play? And then at the end of that, button up with Aaron Jones and what you're thinking about his availability.
I'll start with Aaron Jones so I don't forget. My game pick has rested on his status, and it looks like he's going to play. That's how it feels right now. So I think the Vikings can win the game. I think he's that important. I think that he's been the MVP of the offense through the first 5 weeks and just does so many things for them that if he's back, they're in good shape offensively. As far as TJ Hockenson goes, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you know that Hockenson is desperate to play against his former team, that he would love to go lay a block or two on Kirby Joseph, probably catch a touchdown, maybe do the gritty in the end zone in front of the Lions. But at the same time, I've just gotten to a point with this group, with O'Connell, with the training staff, where whatever they decide to do is probably the right thing. And putting the amount of strain on him to come back and play two games in 4 days just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think that it makes way more sense to have him play a Thursday night football game, then get a week and a half to recover, then get back into that weekly grind. I mean, he has been out of football. He could say, and you're right, yeah, of course, it's like the Tommy John surgery guys who say they throw faster.
Yeah, right.
That's probably just because your body's been rested in a lot of other areas is why you're doing that. But I think that it makes a lot of sense to wait another week. As big as this game is, maybe they could put him in for some sort of package, play 15 plays or something. I don't know. But I think it's probably better to play it safe, put the strain on his body for Thursday, and then give him an extra rest to come back. Because, like we were just talking about, I mean, what the expectations are for this team. It's not one game against Detroit.
No.
This isn't all in, all or nothing, risk anybody's body. This is you're expecting to try to win the NFC, and that is a marathon and not a sprint.
Okay, let's talk Jefferson. Hot take, Justin Jefferson, good at football. Jefferson, yeah, I know, Buck, sit down. I probably should have warned you. Justin Jefferson is amazing at football against the Detroit Lions. If it's his stats, wins, not so much. I think it was our guy Seifert who had the totals for Jefferson in his first 8 games. Justin Jefferson as a receiver has more yards against the Lions than anybody else has ever had in their first 8 games against any team. Schematically, player-wise, outside of the fact he's just a phenomenal player, why has he been so dominant against Detroit?
Well, number one is Detroit. That's probably the number one, is they have just been, yes, not always the best.
Yep.
They tanked. They tanked. I mean, his first couple of years, they were losing basically on purpose. So that's part of it. They have taken years to try to rebuild this defense. And this year, They got Carlton Davis. So I haven't seen his status yet, but he was on the injury report. That could be a huge one to watch. Terrion Arnold keeps committing fouls constantly, the WNBA refs wouldn't call him for it, but the NFL refs do. He's got 8 penalty flags for either holding or interference. That's something to watch. But I think they just haven't had many good corners. And if you don't have good corners, you get roasted. But another part of it, too, is I constantly see Aaron Glenn talked about as a great defensive coordinator, but I have not seen the actual evidence of that. And O'Connell, and even before him, Clint Kubiak, Gary Kubiak, they just seem to be able to take advantage of a very, I think, static type of defense that lines up and plays their stuff. And at Jefferson, if you give him opportunities to get off the line of scrimmage, to get play action down the field, I mean, he's just going to rip you up. And the other thing is, too, that last year Nick Mullins did not know how to throw to anyone else, so he just threw to Jefferson every time, and it was awesome, kind of.
I'm going to end up watching most of this game after I record it. I'm playing golf with Harrigan Sunday at 12:40. Do you want to have somebody fill in for you with Purple Insider and play golf with us Sunday at 12:40? I mean, it's only going to be 80 degrees outside.
So here's the thing. My last round the other day, I thought, didn't know where the weather was going to go, and I thought this could be my last round of the year. I birdied the last hole on a beautiful chip over a little hump. It rolled like I had guided it right up to the cup, tap it in, and I'm like, I don't think I could play again this year.
Tiger Woods has now joined us, Harrigan. I mean, I didn't remember.
Tiger Woods circa 2002.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was a good round. I'm saying I ended with a birdie, and I wasn't sure if I should actually play again until next spring.
Here's what you do. You reach out to one of your Purple Insider diehards. They step in. If it works, all of a sudden you have a Matthew Collar double. So, like, if Sloan needs you to get groceries, you don't want to do it, you go to the double. You know, if you have to go to some party, have the double. Have the clone go. This could be your experiment. Also, you could have it on your phone, you know.
Yeah,
while we're there.
Tweet out a couple things that everyone else is tweeting out anyway.
Yeah, just steal. I mean, you know, I mean, just plagiarism right there.
This feels like Larry David on his wife's birthday, where he's like, "Are you sure we can't just play 9? Like the same thing for the first couple of quarters. Maybe I could just fit in 9 and come back for the fourth quarter."
Exactly. All right, man. We'll be paying attention, and we'll talk next week.
All right. Thanks, Chad.
PurpleInsider.football. He's great, and he was outstanding on the links to Matthew Collar. Am I wrong? It's basically just I'm out of gas. We assume you're not listening, and that's why we put it on, you know, at 2:46 on Fridays.
Tell that to the local politicians who love it.
That is true. There's only one prominent politician who has reached out to me recently, or maybe ever, and said, "I love that segment." And that's Am I Wrong? It's next.